Every Wednesday in the 4 o'clock hour, we start off with Pentagon Solutions, where we take a deep dive into the most critical challenges DOD is dealing with, and we hear from experts inside and outside the building on how to deal with them. Today, it is the budget deal that appears to be at hand. The shutdown provides certainty for the Defense Department until January 15th. But sequester cuts still scheduled to take effect that day, and the CR does not address what happens regarding those cuts. It just gets the government open again. You're hearing on Pentagon Solutions today from two defense budget experts. Later in the hour, it's Gordon Adams from the Stimson Center at American University. First, I welcome Todd Harrison, Senior Fellow for Defense Budget Studies at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. Todd, it is always great to have you on the program. We know about the short term of this. The overall budget's $986 billion. In the top line from fiscal 2013. Beyond that, we don't seem to know that much more than we knew yesterday or last week or 2 weeks ago, do we?
That's right, and I don't think anyone should view this outcome as a success or as progress in any way. All this bill really does, if it does indeed pass, is it'll temporarily reopen the government and refund the Department of Defense and other federal agencies until the next crisis on January 15th, and that's when sequestration will kick in for 2014. The way it'll fund DOD is at the current FY13 sequestered level. And so that is much less. That's about $30 billion less than DOD was planning on having available for this year. And by January 15th, if the FY14 sequester kicks in, that'll drop it another $20 billion lower. So the annual DOD budget will be about $475 billion. This really doesn't do much except kick the can down the road to the next crisis.
It perpetuates the state that you and I and our friends like Gordon Adams have been talking about for the past 2 years or so. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And the debt ceiling as well. They just extended out a few more months. It looks like February 7th plus extraordinary measures will get you a few months past that. This doesn't resolve anything, and it certainly doesn't resolve the larger long-term fiscal question of, you know, how are we going to get our budget in order over the next decade. I think this solidifies my view that the sequester level for defense and non-defense is likely to be the new baseline going forward. Neither party seems to be willing to budge on the big issues they would need to give on in order to turn off sequester.
We speculated about this a little bit last week, Todd, when we talked about your piece in Foreign Affairs. We have a link to that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But one of the things that you said there that has stuck with me through the subsequent week is that the sequester numbers are likely to be moving forward the ceiling rather than the floor.
That's right, because this crisis, I think, highlights the resistance on both sides of this. Sequester is the law of the land. The budget caps that are in the Budget Control Act of 2011, that's the law of the land. That's already in effect. It is difficult to change a law that's already on the books when you have divided government. I mean, that's the reason the Republicans are not able to get any real changes to Obamacare, because that's already the law of the land, and they don't control both chambers of Congress and the White House. Well, Democrats don't really like the sequester. They don't like the spending cuts in that. They would like to have it repealed, but they aren't able to do that because they don't control the House. So they can't get anything passed through the House. And Republicans, and Mitch McConnell came out today as part of introducing this bipartisan compromise. His main selling point to the Republicans is, I protected the sequester. I kept the sequester in place. And so I think as long as that's the position of the Republican Party, I don't see how those budget caps get lifted.
When we look at this, and it seems to me we can expect to continue to see then the parade of OSD officials and the parade of uniformed leaders going to the Hill and saying, this is how this is killing us. You think that's what we're going to see?
Absolutely, but I think as it did last year, it's going to fall on deaf ears. That members of Congress, quite frankly, as I've said on your show before.
It's Todd Harrison from the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments, and we'll get Todd back on the phone in just a moment here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. But Todd, as I mentioned, writing about this recently in Foreign Affairs and expressing that he expects the sequester numbers to be the top line rather than to be the ceiling rather than the floor of the budget numbers that the Defense Department will deal with over the next 10 years or so. And you can read more about that at federalnewsradio.com. We have Todd back on the line. Continue on your thought, though, about the concept that this is that when members of the civilian and uniformed leadership at the Pentagon go to the Hill, you're expecting them to not get a whole lot of sympathy, it sounds like.
No, I don't, because this debate is not really about defense. If it were about defense, then people would be interested in hearing about the effects on defense. But, you know, really, this budget showdown is about entitlements. It's about taxes. It's about things like Obamacare. And that's what members of Congress are actually persuaded by. And defense is a secondary or tertiary consideration right now.
So in that respect, then, when we think about that and we think about the reality of that, of course, I would expect Secretary Hale and whoever replaces Secretary Carter and certainly Secretary Hagel and then the leadership on the uniform side, General Dempsey and the others, to continue to go and plead their case. They're certainly not going to give up. But if the reality is what you're talking about, then where would you expect to see them go strategically to be able to execute this and still maintain all the things that we've talked about before? Or do you expect that they'll just give up on that and we'll see some different kind of strategy that maybe we haven't looked at yet?
You know, I think if they want to actually catch up to the budget situation here, there's a good opportunity right now. It's in the FY15 budget request that they're currently working in the Pentagon and in the 2014 QDR, which is really just gotten underway right now. That gives them the opportunity to say, okay, here are the realistic budget constraints that we're facing in the future, something like the sequester level. How would you revise your strategy if those are the realistic budget constraints you've got? Because you can't do everything you're planning to do today. You're going to have to accept risk in some areas. You're going to have to cut back in some areas. So how would you revise your strategy? And then what are the budget decisions that flow out of that revised strategy? Put that in your 2015 request. They've got the opportunity to do that right now. It's not a lot of time. It's pretty late in the game. But hopefully that is the tack that they will take and put forth a realistic, coherent 2015 budget request that has a strategy that underpins it.
What do you think that top line would look like? What's the 2015 sequester top line as it's written in the BCA now?
I forget the exact number, but the low point under the sequester budget caps is 2014 at $475 billion. It starts growing slightly after that. So we're looking at about $480 billion under the budget caps in 2015. And that's just the base defense budget. War funding is separate. So, you know, they could build a logical and responsible defense budget within that. I mean, we're still talking $500 billion in defense spending. That is, you know, when you adjust for inflation, that's about the level of defense spending we were at in 2007. So, you know, they should be able to build a budget to fit within that, but they would have to make some tough choices. They can't do everything that they're planning to do now.
And you and I and others have had that conversation about how you rearrange those priorities, and no doubt that conversation will continue. But is that 480 number then what we should use as a marker to determine what their strategy will look like and how reasonable we think that strategy will be? If they put out an FY15 proposal for in that 480 range, can we say, okay, they've gotten the reality of this?
Yes, if they come out at that in that level, then I think we can say, look, they've gotten the memo. They realize that they've got to fit within these budget constraints, and they're going to plan accordingly. If they come out with another budget like they did in 2014 that's $50 billion over the caps, then I think you can basically disregard it, because that budget's not going to happen. Congress isn't going to pass it.
Who will drive that, though? Will that come from the administration in the White House, or is that inside OSD?
Well, so the top line budget level is going to come from the Office of Management and Budget at the White House. So ultimately, you know, the White House is going to have the final say on what level of funding they go forward with in the 2015 budget request.
Todd Harrison of the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. There's a lot here. This isn't going away, and I'll look forward to your input on this as things proceed, Todd. Thanks very much.
It's good being back.
Todd Harrison, my guest on Pentagon Solutions on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. We'll continue our conversation about how this deal impacts where the Defense Department's going budget-wise with Gordon Adams of the Stimson Center at American University. Next, it's Pentagon Solutions on In-Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every other Friday morning at 11, brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. Host Jenny Mattingly takes a look at the government shutdown and its effect on government employees and checks in with FEA to learn more about assistance for furloughed feds.
This week's Experts in Health topic is breast cancer detection, featuring Dr. Maya Patel, a family medicine provider with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at the Kaiser Permanente White Marsh Medical Center.
At Kaiser Permanente, we know that early detection and treatment of breast cancer can increase your chance of survival. All of our primary care doctors and specialists proactively review each member's electronic medical record to see when she had her last mammogram. So even if a woman is here for an eye exam, for example, we can schedule her mammogram the same day, usually in the very same medical center. Only Kaiser Permanente doctors can do this, so it's no surprise that we have the number one mammography screening rate in the nation. If you have any questions about breast cancer detection, please contact your physician.
Dr. Patel was recently recognized as 2013 Washington Post Super Doctors Rising Stars in Internal Medicine. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors. Breast cancer screening rate as reported in HEDIS 2012.
The Guiding You Home Safely Report, provided and paid for by the National Air Traffic Controllers Association.
The Department of Transportation's updated its guidance for operating during a shutdown. Air traffic controllers, flight standards field inspectors, hazardous materials safety inspectors, and commercial space launch overseers, among others, would be required to work. Facility security inspectors, routine personnel security background investigators, and aviation rulemakers would be furloughed. As a result, this will delay all next-gen initiatives.
Hi, I'm Trish Gilbert, Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. The longer the government shutdown goes on, the more grave the consequences for our national aviation system. With thousands of safety professionals not on the job, maintenance is piling up, and controllers are operating without critical support. Those that are working are doing so without pay. The only way to restore the aviation system to full staffing and speed is to end the shutdown right now. NACA urges you to call Congress and tell them the shutdown must stop immediately.
The March of Dimes and AFSEA Nova invite you to the 13th annual Heroines in Technology Gala. This event will honor women who exemplify leadership and are making a difference in our community. This year's finalists will be recognized at a Black Tie Awards presentation on Friday, November 8th. All proceeds will benefit the March of Dimes mission to give all babies a healthy start in life. To learn more about the March of Dimes and Heroines in Technology, visit marchofdimes.com/metrodc.
Thanks for listening to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Every Wednesday in the 4 o'clock hour, it's Pentagon Solutions, where we look at the toughest challenges the Defense Department is dealing with, and budget certainly is the one. My guest to talk about it now is Gordon Adams, professor at American University and distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center. And Gordon, your reaction as we look at a $986 billion top line in the continuing resolution that gets us right back to sequester January 15th, it seems like the more things change, the more they stay the same. Isn't that the case?
We're watching Groundhog Day here. It's just incredible. We'll have redux in January. We'll revisit the whole thing. Plus, we will add the joys of sequester on top of it. So we'll have the CR expiring late January, early February, I guess, is February 7th. We'll have the debt ceiling coming due. We'll have the sequester coming due. There'll be some tax issues that need to be resolved and extended into next year. And it's depressingly familiar.
Now, there are times like this that I wish I lived in England, where I could just go to a bookie right off after I got off the air, legally, of course, and take out a bet that there would be a continuing resolution from January 15th to February 7th, based on what I'm reading today.
It's entirely possible. Anything is possible. What I will tell you this, there is a requirement in this deal that asks the budget committees to come together in a conference and come up with a budget deal. The problem they're going to have is that from here on, you know, a year from now, there are going to be congressional elections, and everybody is going to be betting on the come. So they're taking out bets, but they're taking out bets on the come. That is to say, which party is going to keep the House, win the Senate, which means almost everything that they act on between now and next November, not this year but next year, is going to be about who's going to carry the chambers of Congress, which means the incentive to actually cut a long-term budget bargain by December 13th, which is what's in the deal, is extremely small, which I think leads us directly into sequester land.
Well, that's the part of this that I didn't understand, is because when this the framework of this first started to develop, and this provision that there would be these working groups or whatever they're called now, Republicans said they would agree to them. Democrats said, oh, that sounds like the super committee. And at first I kind of wrote it off as just partisan stuff. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, whether it's like the super committee or not, that didn't work. And that was the second or third or fourth group of members mechanism that didn't work. And I don't know that I see any incentive or any reason to believe it will work this time around.
There is no incentive. The same issues are on the table now as were on the table before this deal. The deal settled absolutely nothing except kicking the can down the road. It did not solve the fundamental issue that we're dealing with. So discretionary spending's on the table, defense is on the table, the mandatories are on the table, revenues are on the table. It's the same pile of stuff we've been dealing with before. So nothing has been decided here, and the politics of this continue to be merciless. So I don't see prospects for a deal in December. I do see a very strong likelihood of sequester, a very strong likelihood of kicking the CR can further down the road. The argument's going to be about, is the extended CR at the level of 2013 or lower at the level of sequester? And we'll be revisiting all of these issues until the cows come home. This is, you know, we had the Gang of Eight, the Gang of Six, the Gang of Seven, and this is going to be the over-the-hill gang before we're done.
Well, that's a great reference. I have a football reference I wasn't expecting from you, Gordon. Your friend Todd Harrison was on the program just before you joined us today, Gordon, and he suggests that the opportunity here for the Defense Department to kind of take control of its own destiny is what they do in the 2015 budget request and what they do with the 2014 QDR. Do you agree with that assessment, and what do you think our markers are for those two particular landmarks to help us understand if DOD really sees the writing on the wall and understands where they're headed?
Well, I would add one thing to the pile that Todd gave you, and that is the 2014 expenditure level. The first choice that the department has to make is at what rate are they going to obligate and spend money now? Are they going to obligate and spend it at the 2013 sequester level? Or are they going to obligate it and spend it with one eye towards that January 15th sequester deadline, which is $20 billion less than it was for 2013? If they were smart, they would not do what they did last year. Last year, a year ago, they were spending money at the budget request level like there was no tomorrow. When sequester hit, they were left hanging. So if they're smart this year, they will start spending extraordinarily prudently in October, in November, in December, anticipating that they might have $20 billion less in this fiscal year than the CR level, which is the level that they're going to be given between now and January 15th in this deal. So that's the most important decision they have to make up front. The 15 decision is going to be equally critical. That's going to be made between now and January 15th because the budget process just has to roll on because the budget's coming up in early February. But that early February document has got to be realistic for the Pentagon to do some real internal planning. They have got to be at the sequester level in that budget document, or they may be in deep trouble in 15. The QDR, I don't put too much hope on, I got to say. I don't think that's going to be as critical a planning document in the Pentagon, perhaps as Todd thinks it's going to be. QDRs generally don't operate within budget constraints. QDRs don't generally set a budget trajectory. So it's going to be, you know, sort of wrapping for the cake, if you will, to mix metaphors, but it's not going to be where the critical decisions are made. They're going to be made in the 15 budget process and in the 14 spending process.
But it strikes me that if they did write a QDR this time around that operates within budget constraints and yet still sets out a strategic vision, that that would be an opportunity to send a strong message to Congress that we get it and we're working to work within the parameters that we have to deal with over the next 4 years.
I would hope they would do that. They have not done that typically in the past. You know, realism has, in budgetary terms, has not been the strong suit of QDRs in the past. If they really are being realistic about the long term here, and I think the long term says sequester is sort of setting the baseline for defense for the next 4 or 5 years, if they're going to be realistic about that, then the QDR should conform to that and should say, we can manage this at this level of funding.
How detailed can we expect to see a QDR, and how detailed will we expect to see some of these other some of this other information to be able to try to figure out where they're going to go?
Well, you'll get the 14 spending levels will become pretty clear in the next month or two. So if they're spending out at a realistic level, we'll know what they plan. The 15 details, you know, inevitably are going to begin to leak at some point along the trajectory from here to Christmas, and it will tell us whether they're planning at a realistic sequester level. You know, Secretary Hagel and Deputy Secretary Carter, who's leaving, have said we're going to be realistic about sequester in the 15 budget submission and in the 14 planning. So they'll have an opportunity to show the proof over the next 2 months.
And we will look forward to having you help us understand it when they do it. Thanks very much, as always, Gordon. Good to have you back on the program.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
Gordon Adams, professor at American University and distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center. And you